Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Violet Reiki Radio. And if you noticed something different tonight, I hope you all got to hear my special intro music for this show. We have Harold W. Becker and John T. Gulp as my guests. They are the founders of the Love Foundation. And before we get into that, I would like to thank the founders of the Theka Network for allowing me to bring to you this show, Violet Reiki Radio, every week on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And generally, the topic is Reiki, but Reiki being an intelligent energy and a spiritual practice, we take in all things that make up the Reiki practice, spiritual practice, personal growth, spiritual growth, all subjects, metaphysical, holistic medicine, and the like. If you would like more information about Violet Rose Reiki, please go to my website, www.violetrosereiki.com. You can find Violet Rose Reiki on Facebook under Violet Rose Reiki. And I would also like you to know that I have a page called Reiki Ward, wherein we do distance healing free for humans and animals in all situations that Reiki would benefit. So feel free to look up the page Reiki Ward and send us a healing request there. Okay, let me see. I see that we have a caller. Let's see who's calling in. Good evening, area code 412. You're with Violet Reiki Radio.
Hello, this is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Did I mistakenly click on you and you had no questions, or do you have a question? Or
Yes. You're right, I had no questions, and but I was calling in to listen to the show.
Great, we can arrange that.
No problem. But this is my first time listening, and I didn't know that you had the show, so this is wonderful, because I'm a Reiki practitioner, and I want to hear what you all have to say.
Oh, this is great. I love fellow Reiki practitioners. And just to give you a little heads up, we kind of changed the venue tonight and decided to have it, you know, invite the founders of the Love Foundation, because I myself, and I know Franz Dina from the International House of Reiki, we both feel that Reiki is love. So we're going to be talking about Reiki and love and how Reiki energy and love energy are the same.
Absolutely.
So I guess you...
Presence.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes. Well, I'm so glad you found me and you found the show. And
well, good. Friends with Harold on Facebook, and so I was excited to see your post sharing your program this evening. So I'm going to sit back and enjoy and listen.
Oh, yeah, please do. So I'm going to put you back where you were so you can continue to listen to the show.
Oh, I will. I'll hear what you have to say. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rick. Hang in there and keep listening.
A pleasure.
Nice to meet you.
And you as well.
Good evening, 813. You're on Violet Reiki Radio.
Hello, Rose. This is John.
I know it's John. Hi, John.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing wonderful. Had a
good.
Wonderful day today. Calling from beautiful, sunny, well, now dark, but it was a beautiful day today in Orlando, Florida, and definitely feeling the love.
Of course it was. And Rose was here in New York freezing her extremities off. It was 19 degrees. Let me see. There's another 813 person. Let's see who this is.
Uh-huh.
Good evening, 813. You're on the air with Violet Reiki Radio.
I'm on the air. How wonderful.
Oh, my God. He's on the air. Is this the...
looking for...
Is this the... is this the Harold W. Becker?
Is this the... Yes, it is.
Sorry, I worked in a smoke-filled office today, and I've got hairballs. I apologize.
No worries.
Okay, I've got Harold. John, can you hear Harold and I?
Yep, we're good.
Yay! As I posted on Facebook earlier, it's the Three Musketeers of Love. I don't know.
With the, with the good center, right?
Yes, and I'm the one with the big feather on the hat. But anyway, welcome, guys. It's a pleasure having you two here. This is a very important show for me. I'm just all excited because I love you guys. I love what you do. I just love the whole concept. So what I'm going to do is introduce you one at a time, and you can tell people about the Love Foundation and yourselves. So, Harold, how did you start this? How did you guys start this, and what was the whole thing? What drove you to start the Love Foundation?
Well, in the beginning, there was light, and from that, we went forth and, wait a minute, I'm going too far back. My background originally was in business management, some banking, some finance, retail, and from that kind of springboard of a very logical reality, I somehow found my way diving in out of the mind and into the heart, which led me to go introspective, become more aware of life, the universe, and everything. Started reading, studying, looking inside myself, finding out lots of interesting things I never realized. And in that exploration, I realized that love was the core component in everything that I studied, everything that I looked at, everything that I came to understand, and started writing books, started doing things, consulting, whatnot. And I think from that, literally from the base, that foundation of those first 10 years from like 1990 to 2000, I did a lot of my own self-understanding, search, exploration, and decided to go forward and do it on a more global basis through a nonprofit, the Love Foundation, which we launched in 2000. With a simple mission and vision to inspire people to love unconditionally, really taking everything we had come to know and understand and present it in a very practical, universal, tangible, useful, understanding so that others could begin to partake of it and really find out what love means to each of us individually. The Love Foundation is really a combination of introspection, lots of experience, understandings, and a desire to really share that globally everywhere that we can so that we can touch lives with the love that we understand and then know ourselves.
Cool. And, John, what made you decide to ride along shotgun on this venture?
Oh, Harold and I have been friends for a very long time, and we've essentially shared a parallel paths, a spiritual path together. We've done a lot of exploration, and it really came down to no matter what we looked at, whether it was like self-help or we looked at a whole variety of like religions and so forth, just as sort of what's the meaning of life and so on. And everything started coming back to love. Every major religion, if you look at their core message, it's really about love. And even in a very personal way, there was this understanding that, oh my gosh, like if nobody else is going to love me for who I am, I'm going to love myself for who I am. So there was a deep understanding about unconditional love for self. And Harold has written about it in his books. He describes unconditional love as an unlimited way of being. And so to me, it really is all about love. As it pertains to Reiki, a very good friend of ours had gotten her Reiki master certification and so forth and wanted to teach, and she wanted us to be her first students. And sweet, wonderful lady flew out to see us, and we started going through the books and the course of understanding it all. And we were answering questions and talking to her all about love. We didn't know about Reiki. We just knew about love. And so, again, it all came back to love. And so we do have our Reiki certifications, second degree. And thus, it's something that just permeates. And I think, like, the Reiki stuff amplified what we were already doing intuitively. So I think Reiki is, a very powerful tool, especially when you can combine it with a deep understanding of self-love, because then you can really share that compassion and love and so forth.
Yeah, I find, I've been saying this for years since I started my Reiki practice, that Reiki is love, because I know when I do Reiki, when I give Reiki, I feel that it just feels like love flowing. It's like, yes, this is Reiki flowing, but the feeling I pick up aside from that is there's love in here. This is love. And I know Franz Stina of the International House of Reiki also feels the same way, because lately I've been hearing Franz say that a lot the past couple of years. He's definitely say, Reiki is love, and a lot of people are kind of catching on to this. And it's like there was a story back a couple of months ago, I guess you guys remember, about a mother who had a baby, and they thought the baby was gonna die because it wasn't breathing or something, and she told them to put the baby on her chest. And after a few moments of being, above its mother's heart with her holding him or her, the baby did start to show signs of, really coming around, and the baby survived. And I'm like, that's the power of pure love. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So you guys are Reiki practitioners, and this is just, wow, imagine getting a session by both of you. All that love, all that Reiki, woo! Next time.
You've experienced us in stereo before, so you know.
I did. It's a powerful force, I'll tell you that much.
Nothing better than a Harold and John sandwich, right?
No, absolutely
when
nothing better.
When you're the
better.
Center.
I mean, I was sandwiched by two poodles yesterday, but they cannot compete with you guys. So I know you have both written books. So, Harold, I don't have all of yours remembered or memorized. I know John has written a book called Angels, Love, and Light. Do you have another book, John, a newer one, or something else coming out?
No, that was it. That was, I'm sure I've got one in me, but it hasn't come out yet. But the Angels, Love, and Light is interesting because I wrote it at the same time when Harold was working on his book, Unconditional Love and Unlimited Way of Being. And what was fascinating to both of us when we were sort of done is that the things that Harold was writing about and really going into depth of it explaining, I was writing in poetry. And so the energy that we were channeling, like in, you know, separate rooms, but working on it at the same time, we were channeling sort of the same energy of, you know, our higher selves coming through and talking about love and light and angels and personal power and so forth. So they do relate to each other.
Okay. And Harold, what are your books? What are the titles of your books?
Well, the very first one is Internal Power, Seven Doorways to Self-Discovery. The second main one is Unconditional Love and Unlimited Way of Being. And then there are three more that are more complementary books. The two books that really go in depth are those two particular books. And I would like to actually add a little bit more to the background. I said when I was in the business world and made a fairly big transition, the basis of a lot of that transition was while I was in the 80s, while I was going through college and getting my master's degree, my mother had come down with an illness, which they had misdiagnosed the first year. And basically, I watched my mother, you know, fade away and begin to die on all of us. And in that, kind of faced and recognized and dealt with my own concepts of death. My mother kind of woke up one day and said, on some level, you know, she wasn't going to take whatever this diagnosis was. And she decided she wanted to live, so she went to the Mayo Clinic, and there they diagnosed her with a rare form of leukemia that's supposed to hit men in their 50s, and she was a lady in her 40s. But with that diagnosis, they were able to begin to do things to at least bring it into control, because they were actually, you know, spending a year doing the wrong thing on the wrong illness diagnosis, and now that they have the, you know, they had something they could work with. What that actually did is it brought me into a situation where my parents decided to get involved with a cancer support group, and I decided to get involved with them. So every week we would go to this cancer support group, and over the time period of 6 months, a year, I began to realize a tremendous amount of the mind-body connection, which in many ways I now see was the precursor to the recognition of love and then what eventually would become, you know, us touching into the Reiki world and becoming familiar with it and then actually becoming certified in it. And a lot of that intuitive basis that John referenced and that we already knew, it had some of its core learning, core experiences by noticing how particularly, and Reiki is so often used in health-related issues, although it can be used in all varieties of types of issues, but it's generally when people feel out of balance health-wise. I noticed that when people have very specific diagnosis and they believe that diagnosis, they would follow. Say if they got 6 months diagnosis from a doctor or terminal, they were usually gone within 6 months. But the ones that said they wanted to live or somehow, you know, indicated in their own psyche that they wanted to know more about their situation, take more responsibility for it, they had a tendency to last much longer and find a much more healthier type of lifestyle, often looking at alternative modalities, health approaches, and incorporating, if not, you know, completely going holistic, they would often incorporate more holistic activity. In that, I can see the seed understanding that it was really when we began to love ourselves, love our bodies, love the situation rather than be afraid of it or repel it or resist it or give our power over to an outside authority, that it really had a profound impact on health and balance and well-being. And that is really a lot of the fertile ground that caused me to write the first book, which was his Internal Power, Seven Doorways to Self-Discovery. Because I think in that mid-'80s, late-'80s, I was beginning to really discover life itself and who I am in relationship to life, things that I would have never, have considered in a very left-brain, logical business world, business acumen, business management, doing all those types of things. I really did start making the transition from the head to the heart. And as John mentioned, one of the things that we did look at, since neither of us had strong religious backgrounds, we looked at all the religions because we kind of wanted to understand, all the different, key issues of life. And in particular, I read one book that had a summation of each major religion that's ever been known. And, by the time I'm done with the book, I'm like, every master teacher that spawned a religion, that master teacher only had one message. It was a message of love. And they said, focus only on love. So I'm done with the book, and then this particular book didn't even make reference to how this connected. So for me, love became a very prominent piece because I saw what was happening with my mother. When she started to love herself, she started to heal. When I started to love myself, I started to thrive and prosper and become much more creative. When I saw other people doing the same thing, there was a positive response. So Internal Power was my first opportunity to write down everything that I had come to understand about life and created these seven areas that I thought were key areas. And, as any of us that, around the late 80s, we knew of, like, say, John Bradshaw and The Child Within. That was a very prominent piece. Positive thinking was a very prominent piece in the 80s. But nobody was linking all these pieces together. They were fracturing. They were still, if you focus on positive thinking, that's what you did. But you didn't relate it to creativity. You didn't relate it to masculine and feminine energy. And essentially nobody related it to love. And I found that I wanted to write, my first writings where I was bringing all these fascinating and beautiful and amazing insights into one condensed version where a person could kind of walk from beginning to end, start with choice, which is the first doorway, end up with unconditional love as the last doorway, and explore and discover a whole lot about themselves through each of those doorways. And I had no writing acumen, no idea that I could write. The book actually came out in 6 weeks. I mean, it took me about 6 weeks to write. And, having had no basis, I just simply trusted myself at that stage. And here we are, all these many beautiful years later, and we keep on keeping on from that beginning place where all this really came and sprang forth to life.
Wow. So in the Harold when he discovered the right side of his brain, it caused all kinds of great things. Because you seem to be a more left brain person, geared person, and I guess that's you had all of that business and other stuff going on, but the right brain took over and look what we got from it. It's great.
Well, and one of the doorways is actually a very little, I find, a topic that is not discussed or really not understood. And it's one of the ones that I wrote about already in the first book was the masculine feminine energies. We have such a tendency in society and all cultures to identify ourselves as either male or female by our body types. Most people do not have any concept or awareness that we all have masculine and feminine energy within us. And the way I boil it down in the quickest expression to help people understand it is that our masculine energy is our willpower. It's our ability to actually manifest. But feminine energy is the imagination, the insights, the awarenesses that actually spawn the manifestation. And we need both in order to make anything happen in our world. So we all have the gift and the ability to imagine any potential, any possibility. And we all have the ability to act upon that which we imagine, which is our willpower. But there's more to it. There's greater explanation, of course, which we don't need to go into at the moment. But that concept helped me understand that the right and left brain and the right side and left side of our bodies are really meant to work in harmony with each other. And for the most part, as we see in a very patriarchal, male-dominated world that has been around for the last several millennia, the tendency is to dominate with the left brain. And there's been a fair suppression, I would say, on the right brain or the heart center. And we're finally coming to a place of understanding where it's not that the feminine energy is rising up to move beyond the masculine to now dominate, quite the contrary. It's about bringing the feminine into proper balance with the masculine so that we all recognize our creative potential and we recognize our ability to act it out in with our willpower. And bringing those two to balance is how I would actually describe that. That understanding helped me to bring the strong, logical left brain part of me into greater harmony with my creative side, with my imaginative side, you know, and bring myself into greater balance. And that's a very key component to Reiki to me, is that Reiki works when we are the clearest vessel for the love to flow naturally without any impeding. And to relate it all to what you've said, I mean, for us, we have always seen love, light, and Reiki to be essentially synonymous words. To me, Reiki mm-hmm. is simply love in action, if you could even say love is in action. You know, to me, they are truly one and the same, especially to the degree we step out of the way and let love do what it does. And that's where harmony and balance play a key role in our effective ability to be channels for the Reiki energy, to be channels for the love energy.
Right. So in other words, what we're discussing here now is the left side of the brain is your masculine side and the right side of the brain is your feminine side. And you really want to have balance of both sides. Right?
Right. And we need to, in order to do that, structurally or say culturally or socially, we're going through a transformation, you know, not even in our Western worlds, but really in all the cultures, East and West and everything in between, we are innately coming to grips with this understanding that, you know, we aren't just male or female in body. It's not that, say, you know, a masculine guy, if he embraces his feminine energy, is going to become effeminate. It's quite the contrary. We become more whole and balanced. And a woman, you know, as for an example, you know, typically in the last 2, 3, 4 decades, the women, you know, if they got into more of a left brain approach, if they started embracing more of their masculine, they have the tendency to take on very masculine roles and be very aggressive in order to work in, say, the masculine-dominated world. That's not it either. It's that we're not here to throw our male and femaleness out of balance. We're here to embrace the full potential that resides in each of us. So a woman, for example, can improve her connection to her own willpower and realize that things can move, you know, through imagination and they can actually take action and they are no longer dependent upon the men around them. They can, you know, work for their own careers. They can have a life of their own. They can make things happen, which wasn't really much known, you know, in decades and centuries past. So we are moving in a phase where the balancing is becoming more prominent. And, of course, for us, we'd rather have people understand more consciously what they're doing so that they can actually help that process become more expedient, more efficient, because they realize it's all within them. And I think this is a key component to everything we'll be sharing tonight, is it's all within us. You know, if we're doing Reiki with someone else and we're assisting someone else, that healing is within them. We're simply facilitating. We're the catalyst. We're assisting that. You know, if we're in need of assistance ourselves, the true answers to the true healing, the true balance is already within us. We're simply finding ways to assist that process to happen more naturally. And balance and harmony are key to making any of this truly work and be sustainable and transformational, and not just a temporary band-aid, which is, you know, unfortunately what happens, for example, again, with the health world, so much in the medical world, it often is more of a temporary band-aid because it's not really solving the holistic needs that make up the imbalance and the ill health. And, you know, it's really a much bigger interconnected picture. And yet, you know, as we're sharing tonight, easily solved with a single understanding of love.
Right. It's like I'm spending a lot of time with a gentleman who is a chain smoker, and he's had multiple issues. I mean, he wound up contracting a diabetes type 2 because of the weight, and he had what he calls a little heart attack a year ago. And he's starting to lose weight now, but he has a sweet tooth, so he's fighting with the diabetes, because if you have a sweet tooth, that makes matters even worse. And now with the chain smoking, and I look at him, and yesterday I kept thinking to myself, does this man not love himself? Why is he doing this to himself? Why do we all do what we do to ourselves before the light bulb goes on and you say, hey, this is me, I love me, and I want me to be well, you know, totally well in all areas? I mean, I just,
absolutely.
It boggles the mind, but I know we're all victims of it at one point or another in our lives. I don't really think anyone wakes up or anyone is born and it's like, oh yes, I'm born, I'm here, I unconditionally love myself and I'm going forth into the world.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're usually products of multi-generations of difficulties that are passed down generation to generation. And thankfully, I have to say, like, you know, even in my particular instance, you know, everything has a gift within it. Even the most challenging, most difficult situations are gifts for not only the person going through it, but those around us. And I can say that, you know, my mother's cancer, for example, it triggered something in me to go within. It triggered something in my father. You know, my father had been a sergeant in the Army, and pretty much for the first 25 years of their marriage, which is about the time the cancer showed up, was around 25th anniversary. You know, he was a very strong, hard-nosed masculine, not a really nice guy at all, and generally not, you know, that particularly loving, you know, obviously to himself, as we know now, but to my mother. In many ways, I thought, you know, they should have been divorced before they got started. And yet, I had my trigger point with my mother's illness, the diagnosis and the illness, because I started to go within. My father had a literal 180. He went from growing from this very dominating man to almost bordering on a blubbering, compassionate, you know, nurse, because all of a sudden he woke up and, you know, he didn't want to lose his wife. We were a very unusual family, since we were the only ones that went to this support group, for example. As a family unit, and it was really amazing to see the combinations that, say, a critical terminal illness would bring up in families, and the anger and the hatred and the repulsiveness and the indignity that came out of it. And we were, you know, as a family unit, going quite the different way, and very holistic and very supportive of one another. You know, that trigger point also was a trigger point for my mother, because she had an opportunity to make choices for herself. And at this point, we were not consciously aware of Reiki. Reiki did come several years after this, and we did start, you know, using more conscious Reiki activity. Yet the love that was becoming part of our awareness was becoming part of our collective healing. You know, and that collective healing was its early versions of Reiki, as I would say now, because we would often do the hugs, we'd often do the touching, the nurturing, and all those types of things, which are very much Reiki, perhaps not with the upswing that you get when you have the Reiki certification, you know, that one goes through. But the experience was nonetheless the healing experience. And I can say, you know, fast-forwarding many years later, and even my experience with Reiki, you know, if we participate with someone that requests Reiki from us, we're very clear and conscious now, unlike the early years where we would just simply be Reiki, you know, by request or whatever. We are very clear now that we will actually invoke the individual that is asking for Reiki to co-participate and take responsibility for their own healing. Consciously up front, verbally up front, because it's no longer about, you know, laying hands on someone and doing Reiki energy and, you know, not involving all parties that are involved, because the healing is the holistic piece, not the individuated or the feel-good moment. Because certainly Reiki can feel really great, and it is amazing, you know, feeling, but if we want true
permanent healing, everyone needs to be conscious and aware for that to really happen.
And I, if I can add to it, I think the understanding of the holistic healing, Reiki energy affects us on all levels of our being, so physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. And using your mother's cancer as an example and your own, your mother's actual healing of it, it was very interesting to see her come to a point where she had been so angry and holding it all inside, so all of this emotional energy that she was storing then physically in her body. And then when she got to the point of releasing that, she realized that she forgave the rapist because she was tired of being angry. And she had held on to it all those years because she wanted to hurt the rapist. But, of course, the only person she was hurting was herself. So when she came to that realization finally and was able to forgive him and release it and release all of that anger, she went into remission after that. I mean, it was fascinating to watch. But for me, what I was realizing, even as you were just talking, was that Reiki energy, especially when you're doing Reiki on someone, they want physical healing. Reiki energy is going to move stuff physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. So it's going to bring stuff to the surface. And where people probably really want like that instantaneous, miraculous healing, they can get it if they can get it at all levels of their being. But what it more likely does and what we've experienced with people is that it stirs the pot. It brings things to the surface so that they actually can be healed, they can be released and let go of. It's really a fascinating, rather comforting thing. In fact, when we work with people, we oftentimes, as Harold was saying, we'll work with them like mentally and emotionally while we have our hands on them, you know, because even the warmth of the hands coming, the Reiki coming through is actually physically comforting to them while they're going through this emotional catharsis.
Oh,
so
definitely.
It really...
I said definitely, yes.
And, you know, it really comes back to a holistic approach. And even, I know I'm talking a lot, but anyway, Harold...
For you, no, John, this is fine.
We can all talk a lot. Let me just go. When Harold talks about unconditional love as an unlimited way of being, he actually says that love is something that we experience as a physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual experience. So love really exists. It runs through our entire being, just like the energy of Reiki would do so. And then, of course, unconditional means removing all of the restrictions, the judgments, the things that we've placed on ourselves, either mentally, emotionally, and so forth. So unconditional love and loving oneself unconditionally is just simply about that self-acceptance, good, bad, right, wrong, tall, short, fat, skinny, you know, whatever it may be, however we've been judging ourselves and all those things, it's sort of looking at ourselves and saying, this is who I am. It's okay. I'm going to accept myself, you know, on every level of my being. And I actually feel that Reiki facilitates that understanding, you know, that it really helps draw all of those bodies together to work harmoniously into a holistic self.
Right. I agree. I mean, it's people don't realize, like, now I forgot which one of you said that, but people come for Reiki, and it's like instant coffee. Okay, I'm going to have this Reiki section, and you, the practitioner, you're going to make me feel better, and you're going to do it all. In other words, there's no participation, no personal participation needed by the person who's coming for the Reiki. But that's like almost key, because if you don't participate in your own feeling, in your own healing, and if you don't make up your mind, like Harold's mother did from the get-go, that you've had enough of this being unwell, and you want to take action and do something about it. So that coupled with going for Reiki or going to any other kind of holistic modality for healing, that is the optimum, I think, and, you know, you've seen it personally, that would work. I mean, I think people still here in the West are still thinking, well, I go to someone who practices healing, and if I go to a doctor, he gives me a pill, and that's instant, you know, relief. But all that's doing is relieving symptoms. It's not getting to the disease. And they think the same thing. Well, I'll go to a Reiki practitioner. They'll give me Reiki, and, you know, I'll be fine without having to participate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's what people think a lot of the time.
And there's an interesting counter component to this that, you know, as you know, you've been around me long enough, Rose, to know that I like to bring up the stuff nobody likes to talk about at times.
And
discuss it, because
Harold Becker, the 357 magnum of emotions, feeling on every and any level.
We like to get people to cry, yeah.
Yeah.
Part of the challenge, and it's something, you know, we've dealt with personally, so I'm not saying that I'm looking outside. We went through it ourselves with our master Reiki practitioners, you know, that assisted us, and others that we've observed Reiki practitioners. You know, there's a component that a lot of, and let's just say in this particular instance, we're talking about Reiki and Reiki practitioners, will not always acknowledge their own mind control over the Reiki idea. In other words, there's an egoic part. There's a personality part. You know, Reiki practitioner, you get certified, you start having experiences, you start feeling good, you start helping people. And, you know, we come from our heart. Reiki really is a practice that I feel that really heart-centered people are drawn to. And yet, you know, we're on this planet. We do have both parts of our, you know, right and left brain. We do have personality. We do have an ego. No matter how hard we try at times to, you know, be the clearest channel, there is this tendency for, you know, a practitioner who feels confident with their experience. There's this point where we kind of move from back out of the heart, back up into the mind, and then we have a tendency to want to control the outcome. We want to control the healing. We want to, we start to invade the process. And I've seen this in numerous instances. I had my, you know, own variations of experiences over, but I've seen a lot of practitioners were hanging their heads on the wall. They've got their certificates. They will laud over people, you know, how many of the variations of the certificates and the lineage and the whatnot and so forth. And then when they get to the individual, you know, they, again, using very, you know, kind of more typical cultural terms, they want to play doctor. You know, they you know, they're mm-hmm. from the heart. They want to help heal. But they start trying to make it happen. And the moment we start getting the mind involved again with Reiki, it doesn't work. You have to come from that real pure essence of love and let the love itself, which is natural harmony, natural light, natural balance, to do what it needs to do for the highest and best good of all. But I have seen, and again, not always the most pleasant part of the topic, but, you know, Reiki practitioners themselves need to be very self-aware, very tuned in, turned on, tapped in, you know, conscious of their own, you know, ego desires, you know, their own efforts. I've seen Reiki practitioners who, beautiful souls, beautiful beings doing wonderful work, and their own bodies fall apart underneath them over the course of a few years. And to me, Reiki invoked, you know, 50-60% of that energy that's invoked that is shared with another comes through your own body first. So if anything, Reiki, universal Reiki energy would be in the gift of giving, automatically a gift of receiving because it's coming through us first. So
right.
It tells me when something starts to falter in the Reiki practitioner, or if there's too much of an emphasis on, look how wonderful I am, there's a sense like, you know, something's not quite right. And so we have to be mindful of not playing into the trap of having you know, clients and you know, say patients or whatever you would want to call it, and think that somehow we are more gifted than they are, or that we are doing something that is more powerful than they are, or anything that really speaks, again, of an egoic personality thing. You know, if we're going to be true practitioners of love, true practitioners of Reiki, true vessels, chalices of these energies, you know, first and foremost, we need to be aware of ourselves. And there are a lot of individuals that, you know, they are drawn to these modalities, whatever healing modality, because they themselves are looking for a level of healing. And it's not that we can't evolve and grow simultaneously through our own healing. We help heal others and so on and so forth. There's a synergy that goes on. But to think that we get a certificate and we're instant masters, that's not how it works. It really just doesn't happen that way. We need to be ever mindful, always mindful of our own selves in relationship to whatever modality of healing that we're facilitating, being a catalyst for, working with, you know, whether it's on a mental level, emotional level, or spiritual level, or physical level. I mean, it is, true dedicated practitioner is going to be first and foremost self-aware to the very best of their ability, and in that self-awareness, make themselves the greatest potential assistance for those around them. So, you know, we tend to look at the ones that are, you know, there as the so-called client, and look at their needs and perhaps their willingness to or desire for a quick fix. You know, we also need to look at ourselves as practitioners in the same relationship. It's an always, you know, self-awareness is constant in the present moment. And that's how we become the best facilitators of healing for everyone involved, my estimation, my perspective.
Yeah, it's like when I first had become a Reiki master, it seemed like when I opened my practice, everywhere I went, people would introduce themselves to me, and it would go, "Oh, hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm a Reiki master." And I'm like, okay, shall I bow down now and say hallelujah? And, you know, I never, ever introduce myself as a Reiki master. If I'm in a Reiki group, I'm just, "Hi, my name is Rose. If you want to know my level, ask me." You know, if it's important to you that you know I'm a Reiki master, if you know I'm a Reiki, you know, teacher, ask me. But, you know, I'm just a practitioner. But, yeah, that ego does take over. And, you know, there were some times in Reiki Ward when we got cases in there of people who were really, really bad, stage 4 cancer. And I know everybody was Reikiing their guts out, so to say, to save this person. Because, you know, we all are here to help and to be of service and to heal and what have you. But I think a lot of times what people lose sight of is that we are human beings and we are not God and we cannot control anything. And we all put our best efforts into these cases and we try and save these people. You know, we try and give them all we've got. But what happens is there was a case where people were very disappointed. And I said, you know what? Don't be disappointed because you have to realize we have no control. It's God's choice, you know, when your time is up, it's up and that's it. But take solace in the fact that we know we did our best and we know that when that person did cross over, they went with tranquility, peace, calm, and feeling loved from the Reiki energy. So it wasn't that you failed or we failed. It was what had to be. But it went the way it had to go in the very best possible manner. So that should make you feel sort of good, you know?
Well, true healing, we never really know how that healing, because the healing is happening in the other individual. And you made the point that I was going to address is that true understanding of Reiki, true understanding of love is to be wholly detached from the outcome. Therefore, who are we to say that while we're doing Reiki that the transition that a person may then take anyway isn't exactly what we were doing the Reiki for to help that transition? You know,
exactly.
No one wants to lose a loved one because we like their presence in most instances. And yet, if we're really genuinely coming from a true unconditional loving center point of life, then our perspective would be with love, with Reiki, with any kind of healing modality, we simply share the love, and it goes and does whatever is the highest and best good for all, and we trust that. You know, John mentioned that, you know, it is on all levels, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. And where someone, say, may come to us and, say, have a physical condition, a physical imbalance, an ill health, something that is causing them more of a physical trauma and focus, we may first participate with Reiki and, you know, maybe even ourselves be focused on that because that's what's brought to the table. It's what's brought to our awareness. And we may or may not see immediate physical results of physical improvement. Well, it's because that Reiki energy might very well be moving the emotional energy that has been stuck or moving the mental energy that is blocking. And those need to happen first before the physical will actually come into the balance. Well, Reiki's working on all levels, and we cannot just identify ourselves with physical aspects and physical healing, physical results. We need to recognize that Reiki is intelligent energy. It's wise energy. It's loving energy. It's light energy. And it knows better than we can possibly know from our limited five-sense human as to what's happening. And when we trust that, it's really fascinating. When you trust it on that level, it has a tendency, in our experience, to work faster, more efficient, more effectively than when we are trying to dissect it and work it out in our more linear fashion or our more specific, you know, looking for particular results. That when we're not looking for them, it's actually when the spontaneous healing happens more naturally and more quickly.
Right. I don't know if you guys know of Dr. Larry Dossey, but I had him on the show a couple of weeks ago. And he wrote a new book called One Mind, and he was such a delight to have on the show because here's a doctor. He used to be the chief of a hospital in Texas. I don't remember the name of the hospital, but he is a big proponent and truly believes, you know, your mind controls your body. And you know, it has to be a group effort, the mind and the body and the heart and the soul. It's all one thing. It's not just my body is my body. And there's no connection between the mind and the body. And, you know, I think we all need to start thinking more along those lines because there's, like you said, you know, there's a little bit too much emphasis put on the physical. And I find it's the same thing with love. People, when you say the word love, the first thing most people think about is, I'm sorry, but it's like sex. Okay.
Yeah, girl meets boy. Rose is going to say sex. That's what it is.
It's like girl means boy, boy means boy, girl means girl, whatever. Love, sex, yes. It's like, no. Can you wrap your mind around love and the feeling of love and what it's all about? And self-love, it starts in you. And people still do not get that concept. There's a lot of people, sorry to be saying this, but it's true. I mean, I see it in my counseling work. I see it in my psychic work. And the thing that I always feel so bad when you say to someone, you know, just love yourself. Put the focus on yourself, and the rest will all just fall into place. Don't worry about it. But they're so concerned that no one is going to love them. They're not going to find anyone. Their world is not going to be complete until they find a person who will love them. And it's just, yeah.
We always seek that outside of ourselves that we have within. You know, It's fascinating, you know, on a bodily level, the body has such an incredible, profound wisdom. You know, when we catch a cold or something, the body's already in the mode of bringing balance back in. If we cut ourselves, the body's already taking care of the healing. Where we have our challenges is mentally, emotionally, and physically, you know, and we often are throwing ourselves constantly out of balance. And there comes a point where the stresses that we place upon ourselves through nutrition, through environment, through our own conscious inner critic, inner anger, inner hatred, inner self-loathing, all those types of things are all stressors, and the body gets overwhelmed. It comes a point where there's just too much, and so it does fall into ill health and disease and you know, eventually death. So we are well set if we place our attention on how to bring greater balance and work with our physical body, work with our emotions, work with our mind, and come from our heart. And again, you know, I'm obviously very biased, spending the last over two decades, you know, focusing and being an exponent of universal love, the unconditional love, the self-love, the self-acceptance, the going beyond the physiological, going beyond the emotional. You know, one of the things we have with the Love Foundation, you know, 14 years now as a nonprofit, actually this month, we're starting our 15th year, 14-year anniversary, and over these years, sharing the inspiring unconditional love, and in the very earliest years, people laughed. They said, don't give up your day job. You know, it was so conceptually out of their mind.
Poo-poo.
Here we are. Years later, we've brought it into the dialogue. We've brought it into more and more of the mainstream discussion. More and more people use unconditional love in the conversation, which is leaps and bounds closer to understanding what love is, and people are beginning to question love beyond the self, of the outer self, of the outer personality, looking for love outside of ourselves, and we're beginning to realize the body goes naturally into balance. The mind naturally goes into balance. If we facilitate all of this, we will be healthier, wealthier, wiser, and more loving because we understand that it's all coming from within us, and what that which we have within we give out, that which we give out comes back to us. So, you know, unfortunately, the reverse is what people usually do. They look outside themselves for love. They don't find it because they're not recognizing it within themselves. It's completely changed. It's transformational when you realize that love is within us, and the love we have within is what we give out. And when we give out that love, that is, in fact, the very way we begin to bring love back into our lives from the external experiences. But it is an inside out. You know, we start from within and go out rather than the way we've been culturally and societally and generationally taught to seek everything outside of ourselves.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like the, you know, greedy people are always looking money, money, more money, more money. I have to make more money. And those very same people who are striving to make all the money they can in the world are the ones who are hanging on to it, not spending it, not giving to charities, not, you know, they're hoarding it and money, and they're miserable and they want to know, well, why am I so miserable? And it's the same concept with love, you know, like you said, it has to have a flow. It starts from within, it goes out, and when you send out that vibe, then it comes back to you. And there's a constant flow of whatever.
Exactly.
Love, money, whatever.
When we're in touch with ourselves, we are then, again, holistic. And in that holistic part, we're no longer afraid of being separate from ourselves. And we then can make completely and totally different choices. I mean, I know from my own experience, having come from the business world, one of the things that I started to realize while I was in business is that I didn't seem to fit there anymore because I probably never fit there because in middle management, in vice president banking, what have you, you know, I was very respectful, very understanding of the frontline people. To me, they were the ones that dealt with the customers, and if that wasn't 100% top-notch, you know, what was the point of being in that business, in any of those types of businesses? But I also looked at, you know, upper management. I recognized that they often had the chance to see the bigger picture, and they made decisions and stuff, but what I didn't understand was the gap. I didn't understand why upper management couldn't understand the appropriateness of all of it being a holistic unit, that there weren't layers, there wasn't hierarchies. Their whole part was to work together. And I really think that was the key part for me why I walked away from the whole business world in 1990, really not knowing where I was going to go next, never anticipating, you know, writing books or being on TV, you know, doing those types of things, much less having a globally recognized international, you know, nonprofit. in working with people in 150 countries. I mean, it was just not something that was even near my concept of ideas. But I did know that I wasn't happy where I was. I was doing everything right. I just wasn't happy. So there had to be a way to find that inner happiness. And that is where I began to lay my foundation. And you know, in some ways it's kind of metaphorically and symbolically curious that in 1990 I would have started to lay my own personal foundation on love, and that in 2000 we would actually then externally launch a nonprofit dedicated to a foundation of love. And the message has been the same throughout the last 25 years. It's that self-awareness, self-empowerment, self-understanding, because from that point, we're the ones that live with ourselves 24/7. We're the ones, no matter how close we are to somebody next to us or how deeply in love we are with someone, we're still the ones that are living with ourselves 24/7 from birth to death. So for us, we need to be our own best friend first. Again, my perspective, my understanding, my experience, but I will say that it makes a lot of logical, practical sense to be a good friend to ourselves. And from that, we will be the best friends to everybody around us, because we have a solid foundation relationship with ourselves first and foremost. And, you know, my experience over these last couple of decades is most people do not have that. They do not have a good relationship. Most people are so externalized and so disconnected from themselves, so busy, either so busy with life or so disconnected and suppressing life through supplement-type ways of suppressing their own selves, drinking alcohol, you know, drugs, whatever. You know, they're just so disconnected that they don't really understand anything, because they're really not in touch with themselves, in tune with themselves.
Well, and I think that we're so oftentimes, you know, judgmental of ourselves based on external influences and stuff, that it just gets lost in a mire of, you know, programming from childhood and parents and TVs and all that kind of stuff. And I know one of the things about love, I talked about love existing as a physical, emotional, mental, and a spiritual experience for us. But I think when we say unconditional love, people oftentimes think of it as a very high, unattainable state of perfection, or that it's a divine state of being or something like that. And when we started examining it, what we realized was that love was something that, unconditional love was something that was very practical. And all we really had to do was give ourselves permission. You know, growing up, nobody says, hey, it's okay to love yourself unconditionally. You know, it just isn't really sort of taught. So for me, I took unconditional love down from its very lofty perch of, you know, some unattainable state of perfection, and I actually made it a foundation for my life. And, you know, Harold had gotten this idea of the Love Foundation in meditation, but we both took it to heart and we said, well, let's build a foundation of love first, and then we can launch this, you know, nonprofit. It's just something that, you know, I still make mistakes. I still, you know, I'm still human. But what happens is that when I do make a mistake, rather than it taking away from my self-esteem or something like that, it's like, wait a minute, I still love myself unconditionally. It can't take away from the core of who I am. Now, I might have my emotional reaction, I might feel bad about it, I might, you know, need to go make amends for whatever it was, you know, all of those types of things, that's fine. But it doesn't take away from that core sense of, I know who I am, I know I'm a good person, I love myself unconditionally, this is who I am. Everything that I bring to table is whole and perfect and complete. Sometimes I even say, like, well, yeah, I'm perfect. Well, I'm perfection perfecting itself. So even what might be perceived as a mistake is really just a learning opportunity. Okay, next time I'm going to do it differently. Those types of things. So, you know, it really is just sort of about changing the perspective that we hold on these things, changing some of, examining the programming. Like, where did these thoughts come from? Well, they were probably just handed down from parents or teachers or, you know, religious leaders and so forth. And it's like, wait a minute, do I really believe that? Well, I don't have to. I can give myself permission. And lately, we ran another show recently. They said, like, what's your theme or whatever? And my theme for last year was about joy. It was really about sort of opening up and giving myself permission to experiencing more joy and happiness in life. Because to me, the meaning of life is unconditional love. But the actual experience of life is in the joy, the moment-to-moment experience, being happy, being joyful, connecting with people, and those types of experiences.
Well, if you're living in a state of unconditional love, my feeling is it can only bring you joy. So that goes hand in hand, and that's a great way to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when I read the Four Agreements, it was like, this guy's got it going on, because what he says in the book, Don Miguel Ruiz, it's like, you're living a dream, but it's not your dream. You're living somebody else's dream. You need to live your own dream. And if you feel you are, you know, you can love yourself unconditionally and you want to go out there and love the world unconditionally, then fine. That's your dream. Embrace it. Live it. Forget about what everybody else is doing. And I think the idea of perfection, like you guys said, you know, it's been handed down. Well, sometimes you say, well, why perfection? Well, because this has just been going through my mind while you were talking. It's like, well, we all kind of came from the majority. None of us here are direct descendants of royalty. So it's like, I'm gathering all these poor people looked up to the monarchies and you know, the people in the castles and the royalty all their lives, and, oh, well, see, they're like this, so we have to be like them, because right now we're all unworthy. And I feel that somewhere it started way back then, that we're unworthy and we're not worthy of love, and we have to seek to be like those who we perceive are perfect, when the reality of the whole thing is we're all perfect in our imperfections. And I think once we realize that, it makes it easier for us to embrace self-love and unconditional self-love, and then go on to, you know, express that unconditional love to everyone else. I might be crazy, but
I think there's also like there's a deeper component when you start looking at it from like the soul and the soul self, because oftentimes like the personality wants what it wants kind of thing. And when we don't get it, they're sort of like, wait a minute, I'm a creator being, I've got imagination and willpower, I can go and I can create these things. And then there's sort of like this override button, you go, well, you know, why can't I do that? And or oftentimes in the case, as we were talking about illnesses and so forth, you're like, why am I going through this? You know, I love myself, I feel good, you know, and yet here I am dealing with some physical challenges and stuff. But it's that, oftentimes that soul self, that eternal part of us, wants to know something. It wants to have an experience of something. It's like it expands its own consciousness, even if at times it's like, maybe it wants to know loss, or it wants to know pain, or it wants to know suffering. And it's like, well, those aren't things that I want to know about, because they're uncomfortable. But on the soul level, it does actually give us an opportunity to experience contrast, and it allows us to have more compassion for others that are going through those things. So, you know, oftentimes it's easier just to sort of take a deep breath and relax into it, rather than trying so hard to figure it out or judging it as being right or wrong or something, you know. But.
Yeah, it's like you have such a feeling of release and relief and freedom once you let go. Because I was Well, I can't say I was. It's like an alcoholic thing. I was an alcoholic. I'm a control freak. we've got it to go down.
Don't comment.
My name is Rose, and I am a control freak. Hi, Rose.
Yeah, but, you know, you get it down to different levels. I mean, I was 100% a control freak, took it down to 80, took it down to 60. But, you know, I find that when you give up that stuff, it just, all of a sudden, one day you go, oh, I'm not trying to control anymore, and boy, do I feel free. And if you apply that to other areas in your life, you just feel this tremendous freedom. It's like after my divorce, I said to my husband, because I came home one day and I said, you know, I'm tired of all of this fighting and this craziness. This is insanity. And I'm just going to forgive him for everything. I forgive him. I forgive me. This is just let it go. And I called him and said, this is what you have to do. You have to forgive me. He's like, never. And I'm like, don't do it for me. Do it for you. And he's like, I can't. And I felt so bad because I'm like, dude, this is a tremendous freedom. Weight off your chest, stress off the heart and the brain. And he couldn't do it. I don't know whether he ever did. But, people who hang on to that, but they just cannot forgive. It's like, just try it and watch what happens. You'll be amazed, you know. But
We had a recent experience. This is a very interesting, very recent experience. A good friend of ours was over and was going through some issues with both of her parents, her mother and father and stuff, and she had sort of lifelong issues in dealing with her mother and so forth. And in a recent conversation, it just sort of started coming up, and we started delving into it more, as we will do. And it was essentially that her perspective on the experience, she was just angry because the mother was doing the best that she knew how given where she was at. But our friend was perceiving it as, you know, criticism and, you know, hurtful and all those types of things. Well, okay, now the mother's in the hospital and older and, you know, our friend is trying to help her and stuff, but can't because she can't get beyond her own anger, you know, and resentment towards her mother. Well, all it really took was helping her shift her perspective.
Exactly.
And once she could sort of see that, oh, her mother wasn't purposefully trying to hurt her. Her mother was actually trying to help her. Well, through a series of, you know, we got her to the point where she could forgive her mother and so forth and lots of tears and, you know, whatever. And we actually, her own daughter was with her and actually did a role play. Role played the grandmother and got to the point where they could have this forgiveness of love. Well, the even more fascinating part is it turns out it worked. You know, she's able to actually see her mother and have more compassion and understanding and love. It was working out great. Well, my mother and stepfather happened to be visiting, and we were sharing a little bit of this, and my stepfather was like, but her mother didn't actually say, I'm sorry. And we're like, but it doesn't matter. She'll never say she's sorry. But in this role play, the granddaughter essentially, like, said what the grandmother would never say, you know, kind of thing. And what it did is allowed our friend to change her perspective, and it worked. And we had to sort of explain that to my stepfather, that it's not about the actual experience of, say your ex-husband coming up and saying, he's sorry. He's never going to do it.
No.
you changed your perspective and you went free. So then it doesn't even matter if they say it or not. Even if he came up and said it, you say, well, thanks, but I let go of that years ago because I wanted to be happy.
That's right. I mean, I have a friend who keeps doing things to our friendship, and you know, comes back around after a while and says, you know, something funny, or, you know, makes a kind of admission of, you know, I'm sorry type, but never, ever says I'm sorry. And it's like, okay, I know this person will never say I'm sorry. But the fact that from these little hints and things, I see that he is, okay, I can deal with it. So unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness, I got it. And you don't have all of that angst and anger and, you know, ugh.
And, you know,
it's
those
just
are
healthier
actually,
all around.
Those are actually even situations where you can actually do Reiki on relationships.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
Where I'm used to like doing Reiki on the physical body or something like that, but you can actually do Reiki energy in other ways for the healing, to move the energy, to change the perspective, to allow healing energies into those situations. And if it seems a little, you know, esoteric or something, it's like, well, everything is vibration.
Right.
And our thoughts and our feelings, which you can actually measure scientifically, they have a vibration to them. Just like our heartbeat is electricity,
mm-hmm.
we have an electromagnetic body. Our thoughts and feelings contribute to all of that. And so even to me, like at one point I was trying to figure out like, oh my God, you know, what's God, you know, kind of thing. And for me, I finally defined it. It was like electricity. You can't see it, but you can feel it.
Right.
And for me, the love that I felt between me and my friends and family and so forth, that was more like God to me than anything else. And so to me, Reiki is in that energy. It's that conscious intent to heal. To allow healing and to allow the love, the compassion, the forgiveness, and the freedom, you know, just the freedom to be yourself and stuff. And that's, to me, more of like where that Reiki comes in.
Yeah, it's the act of opening yourself as a channel, opening the channel for the love and the energy to flow and do what it's got to do, you know. No control, no nothing.
And like what you were saying, like when working with somebody else, it just comes in and, okay, I want you to heal me. Well, it doesn't really work that way anymore because to me, the Reiki practitioner says, okay, I'm going to open up a space. I'm going to create a space of love and healing. And if you choose to step into it, the power of our mutual intent to heal, like the Reiki practitioner can amplify their intent to heal. But they actually have to have the intent to heal, not just to suck energy in.
Right, because it's like with magnets. You know, if you bring two magnets close to one another, they will attach. But if you have one magnet far away from the other, well, then nothing's going to happen. The one magnet that's at the end of the 2-foot stretch is the Reiki practitioner. The other magnet is the client. It's kind of a weak signal, and it's not going to have the power that the two magnets have when they're together. So definitely pays off to be a participant in your own healing. And, I mean, this is you. I mean, how do you leave it to someone else? You would think more people want to participate. But then again, like you said, it's perspective. I think we were all raised with the vision or the picture idea of, well, you don't feel good. You go to the man in the white coat, and he gives you something, a shot or a pill, and that's going to make you feel better. It's ingrained in our conscious, you know, in our subconscious, I think.
Now I see we've only got like 10 minutes left, and I'm going to make a very blunt transition and talk about Global Love Day.
You know, John, you're reading my mind. I was looking at the clock and going, I got to get to talk about Global Love Day. Go at it. Go for it. Go ahead.
Well, let's let Harold talk about it then.
No, why?
go for it, John. You're on a roll.
You're on a roll, John, and we'll get Harold to say something. Global Love Day, May 1st. We love it.
There you
it's
go.
The 11th annual. Go ahead, John.
With the theme, Love Begins With Me. And it really does tie into what we were talking about, because what we have within, we give out, what we give out, we get back. And to us, Global Love Day is a celebration of humanity. And we, Harold again, you know, came up with this inspired idea in the middle of the night. And what we realized in going into Global Love Day, that there is no other celebration that celebrates us as a humanity. Most of our celebrations are either religious or political or, you know, a calendar change or something like that. And I think the tenets of Global Love Day really say it best. And I can read them to you. It's that we are one humanity on this planet, that all life is interconnected and interdependent, that all share in a universal bond of love, that love begins with self-acceptance and forgiveness. With respect and compassion, we embrace diversity, and together we make a difference through love. I think that really says it all.
That sums it up beautifully. Yeah. And I know this happens every year around Global Love Day. You guys get proclamations from governors, mayors, city council, who they are then saying that, you know, they're in on the whole movement here.
The proclamations are one of, yes, and the proclamations are one of the areas that we love, because the Love Foundation is non-political, non-religious, and our approach is universal and practical. And as a result, we've been able to touch lives in, you know, essentially all countries, all territories. We have about 52 country and state coordinators around the world that all embody the vision, the understanding that we share through Love Foundation, and take it upon themselves in their own local community, their family, their nation, to share this same vision in respect to their own culture. And because so much of this work as a nonprofit, you know, we have a tendency to really focus upon heart-centered individuals, and at least in the present moment, you know, in the Western world and probably pretty universally, we don't always have a strong, shall we just say, respect for our government political leaders, especially not, you know, seemingly lately. And because we like this invitation, the six tenets that John just read that are the foundation, the framework of Global Love Day, we share that every year we go out to primarily the United States, Canada, and then wherever else we can. We share this invitation to consider Global Love Day as a celebration of our humanity. And I have to say, it's an amazing opportunity to see how people respond, especially in these institutional setups like the government entities, and to see governors, you know, state governors proclaim for the day of May 1st, Global Love Day, and actually acknowledging these six tenets and recognizing that on some level they really understand that we're all here on this planet together. We have, as of today, 428 proclamations combined since we started, and out of that we have 15 new ones, at least five or six more pledged, and we'll probably receive another 20, 30 or more between now and Global Love Day, because we've just sent out the invitations. And each year we gain new cities, new states, and we have repeats. You know, it's always up to the individual mayor, council, commission, governor, you know, whoever is responding. But it's a remarkable aspect of Global Love Day that is simply another indicator of humanity recognizing and choosing love as a way of being, recognizing and choosing that we are in it together. And however symbolic these beautiful, you know, papers are, and we have them all on our website and all archived digitally, so anybody can go to our website and actually see these proclamations over the years, and the newest ones as we're getting them in, we're putting them up, and recognize that, you know, however separate we feel at times, we really are in it together. And the more we find ways to work together with universal understandings and recognition with compassion, that in fact we can actually help heal the planet, help heal each other, help heal ourselves. You know, it is really, again, the metaphor, the symbology is really Reiki in action. It's really love in action. There's synonymous to me And that when we just simply make this our way of being every moment of every day, you know, remove those obstacles, live unconditionally, without limitation, you know, live with love, which, you know, really, practically speaking, you know, a lot of people focus on fear, but if we really understand fear, fear is a self-doubt. When we doubt ourselves, we only doubt ourselves because we feel separate from ourselves. So a sense of perspective or a sense of separation makes us feel doubtful because we're not in tune with ourselves. And that doubt becomes the energy we know as fear. And right now, fear is, you know, a relatively rampant phenomenon on our planet. And all we really need to do is reconnect ourselves. And the way we do that is to remove the separation, is to recognize the love that unites us all. So, again, you know, we started out with a very self-awareness understanding, and here we are, you know, with the Love Foundation even 14 years later, and we're sharing the reminder, because really nothing we're doing is new. It's all universal. It's all timeless. But it's that simple reminder that love is the answer. There really is no question. The love can solve the most complex in the simplest of ways, and it really begins with us. And so that self recognition, that self-connection to love, is how we then share it, and sharing it is how we get it back, and it's also how we remember that, you know, whether we're Reiki practitioner and client, or whether we're nonprofit going out around the world, it's that simple reminder we're all one.
That's right, and really, you know, people become paralyzed by fear, and if you just realize that fear and love cannot live in the same space. So if you replace those feelings of fear with feelings of love, you know, that's a much better way to live your life. Practice makes perfect. So, I mean, you know, you just got to keep practicing it until it becomes habit and you're living in that vibration. Is the essay and poetry thing still going on, or did that end, guys?
Yep, it's still open, and for anyone that's listening in tonight or perhaps in the archives in the next couple of weeks, in conjunction with Global Love Day each May 1st, which is really however people wish to celebrate Global Love Day, whether they have events, gather with their family, or simply go out and meditate or just enjoy the day, pass out flowers, pass out hugs, or just simply contemplate love throughout the day, they're fulfilling the vision and intention of Global Love Day. In conjunction with it, we also host each January through March 31st the Art, Essay, and Poetry Invitational, which is where people can use their creative hand, people of all ages, anyone young at heart, anyone can participate. They can create some a piece of art or a piece of poetry or essay or all three, and they can send it in. All the details are on our website. They can send it in, and we then select a finalist in each of the categories and an honorable mention generally from each of the categories that best represents the theme Love Begins With Me.
Great. You can find Harold and John on Facebook either at the Love Foundation or Harold W. Becker, John T. Gulf. They each have separate profiles. And you can find the Love Foundation on the internet, www.thelovefoundation.com. And you can see everything about the Love Foundation there. And I definitely recommend that you all go to the website and peruse it and enjoy it. Harold and John, I thank you very much for being my guests this evening. It was great. It was wonderful. I hope to see you guys soon, sometime this year. I'll be coming down to Florida. And thank you so much again. And I will see you guys around Facebook, internet, et cetera. Thank you so much. I love you both.
Thank you. Love you.
Okay, sweetheart. Night, night. Thanks to all my listeners. I hope you enjoyed this show. Please check out the Love Foundation, Harold and John. I wish you all a beautiful rest of your evening, wherever you are, in whatever time zone. And I wish you all lots of love, light, and healing.